Canadian Army aids an illegal Palestinian land grab. President Biden gives another of his skilled, polished speeches, reading not only from this teleprompter, but the specific cue directions themselves. Meanwhile, Democrats are reading the more important cues, such as Biden's approval rating, and a bipartisan gun control law has been passed by the Senate. These are just some of the stories coming your way today on World News Brief. Welcome to our program. I'm Bob Siegel, your host for this week. We'll kick off with a story from the Middle East, although it also involves North America, Canada, in fact. I'm reading a news report from United with Israel. Canadian officials have not responded to reports that a delegation of Canadian soldiers is helping Palestinians illegally take possession of land in Area C of Judea and Samaria, where Israel has security and administrative responsibility. Okay, before I go on, a couple things about this article. It's pro-Israel. It's an Israeli article. You're not going to hear this in the news much, but I also want to clarify their terminology. What most people today call the West Bank, what is known as the West Bank in Israel today, was known as Judea and Samaria in Jesus' day, and this Israeli report is mostly using those designations. And of course, while they're calling what Canada is doing with the Palestinians illegal, most people think Israel being in this territory at all is illegal. Let me go on. Last week, RIGAVEM, a non-governmental organization that combats the illegal takeover of state lands, documented Canadian military personnel in uniform patrolling the South Hebron Hills in Area C. This patrol included a meeting with Palestinians at an illegally built Palestinian structure on land belonging to Meon, a Jewish area named Hebron. Shortly after the complaint to the civil administration, the Jewish residents documented the visit of the Canadian delegation, which included two uniformed military personnel, according to TPS. The same delegation was also documented during a visit to the Arab village of Sarif, located 15 miles northwest of the city of Hebron, near the settlement of Karmai Zer in Gush Etzion, and this week was discovered again holding a meeting with PA Arabs near the village of Kisan. Under the terms of the Oslo Agreement, the majority of Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria are designated as Area C. Area C includes more than 100 Jewish settlements with an estimated population of more than 400,000. It also includes Arab villages, IDF bases, and uninhabited areas. In contrast, Area A, where the majority of Palestinian cities and villages are located, is under full administrative and security jurisdiction of the Palestinian Authority. In Area B, the PA retains administrative jurisdiction while Israel is responsible for security. The final line of the report reads, Canadian officials have not responded to Israeli media queries. Well, there's a big surprise. All right, my friends, let's return to history. Not historical revision, but real, honest-to-goodness history. You know, the kind chronicled by actual historians, because only by studying genuine history do we find the truth. Not the woke narrative, but the truth. There is no illegal occupation of Palestinian land. Neither has there ever been a country called Palestine. Even this Israeli article is using those terms as conventional reference points because otherwise we wouldn't know what we were talking about anymore. That's what this people call themselves now. I use the term myself, but I want to be clear. There has never been a country called Palestine. These territories left over from ancient Israel, known as Judea and Samaria, are but a small part of a huge chunk of land offered to the Jews by Great Britain, which was administering the Middle East around the turn of the 20th century, and the Balfour Declaration in conjunction with the League of Nations. After Jews came from all over the world in response to the promise, some 75% of the land promised to the Jews was sold behind their backs to the Arabs by Great Britain. This land not only included the land in present dispute, but the entire area that now makes up the country of Jordan. After the betrayal, Jews were offered some table scraps, the 25% of land remaining, providing she split it and give half to the Arabs, a deal that Israel agreed to and the Arabs did not agree to because they wanted all of the land and they wanted the Jews out of the Middle East altogether. War was immediately waged from nine nations against Israel in 1947 and 1948, but Israel, in a fashion similar to the miraculous wars of the Old Testament, defeated them handsomely. And the Arabs, who might have shared the land with them peacefully, but instead joined the attacking Arab nations, were displaced. They became refugees. Refugees that, for the most part, were never assimilated into the very Arab countries that had encouraged them to wage war against Israel. These same Arab refugees later in the 1960s changed their name to Palestinians, a publicity ploy openly confessed by their leader, Yasser Arafat, who was himself of Egyptian heritage and not even one of the so-called Palestinians. He also invented Middle East terrorism as we know it. Also, in the 1960s, Israel annexed the West Bank, i.e. Judea and Samaria, and other areas after a whole group of nations, including Egypt, Syria, and Jordan, publicly declared that they would annihilate the entire state of Israel, bragged about it for days on end. So after they bragged, Israel instead waged a preemptive strike for the sake of her own survival. So please, no sanctimonious lectures on how Israel is living in illegal occupied territory. It is a lie that's believed all over the world, and a lie that's believed by most Americans, sadly enough, but a lie, nevertheless. A lie bigger than a hybrid experiment mixing genes from both Pinocchio's nose and Biden's nose. As you can see, I'm a little bit passionate about history. History must be protected. But what will future historians say about the United States in the year 2022? They will find it harder to believe than a book of Grimm's fairy tales, and they'll find it a lot grimmer than Grimm's fairy tales. In the wake of our recent Supreme Court case overturning Roe versus Wade, President-elect Biden, now get this, Biden, wanting to portray himself as a champion of women's rights, gives a speech with a teleprompter, not only reading his cues, but instructions from the cues. It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who register to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. Women are not without electoral and or political, let me be precise, not and or political power. Joe, maybe you should stop letting others write your speeches for you. You don't handle them very well, and we know they don't represent your own original thoughts anyway. Your only original thoughts are your lies. You have to work hard to lie. Those take careful thought. Well, not real careful in your case, not when you claim Hunter never discussed his business dealings with you. That was a little too easy to disprove with recorded voicemails and the like. Besides, nobody was buying it anyway, even before the voicemails. A third grader wouldn't have bought that bullpucky on rye with mustard, but I'll tell you who is buying it. 33% of our public. Yes, sir, Uncle Joe's approval ratings are now a whopping 33%. And this is according to the New York Times, a rag that has tried very hard for the last 2 years to hand out corn pop passes. Having said that, I still have to wonder about these 33% who think Joe is doing a crackerjack job. Just who are these people? What exactly would they reference as an example of a good job? What precisely do they like? The price of food? The price of gas? Safety in the streets? Hoodlums allowed to walk into stores and steal up to $999 worth, just make sure it doesn't go over $1,000, and then they can go on to the next store and start again? Safety from other nations? Countries like China and Russia watch Biden mumble, bumble, and stumble his way through a speech, and they give each other winks and nods. They watch him kiss the behinds of dictators around the world, and they say to themselves, spare no expense to keep this imbecile in power. The useful idiot is a gift. So I ask you again, who are these 33% that are happy with the fine, fine job Biden is doing? Why are they out and about in society voting instead of living behind padded cells? By the way, 64% of Democrats are tired of him too. Democrats Although, while thinking about these Democrats, I'm not sure exactly what they think will happen if Joe gets canned. Yes, he's a total incompetent, but the replacement, well, possibly competent, provided it's not Kamala Harris, this person will be another progressive Democrat and may just be one of the ones already running our country from behind the scenes. Maybe Biden was too stupid to pull this off with finesse, but whoever replaces him will answer to the powers that be, and they will pull it off with finesse. They will pull off this agenda one way or the other. What agenda, you ask? The agenda to destroy America. There is nothing the left is doing to help America. It's as if they were given a list of the 20 things they could do to destroy the country, and they're doing every single one of them. Their plan is to destroy America and rebuild it in their own image, just as General Zod of Superman fame replaced Mount Rushmore with his own carvings. Yes, they plan to destroy America with a little help from Rhino Republicans. I'm reading now from Fox News. The Senate passed a bipartisan gun bill late Thursday night in a 65-33 vote. The bill, spearheaded by Senators Chris Murphy, Democrat, and John Cornyn, Republican, comes in the wake of several recent mass shootings. The mass shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, which left 19 children and two teachers dead, was the major driver behind the bipartisan effort. I am proud that after weeks of hard work, the Senate passed the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, a bill I negotiated with my own colleagues, Cornyn said. Our bill will save lives while placing no new restrictions on law-abiding gun owners. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas wrote on Twitter, "It's common sense. If we want to keep our kids safe, do not disarm law-abiding citizens. Instead, put criminals in jail and have police officers on campus to protect our kids." Well, I'm glad at least some Republican senators are still talking that way. Thank you, Senator Cruz. I'll continue reading this article. The bill now heads back to the House. President Biden has said he intends to sign it if passed. House GOP Whip Steve Scalise announced Wednesday, he would formally whip his members against the bill. In an effort to slowly chip away at law-abiding citizens' Second Amendment rights, this legislation takes the wrong approach in attempting to curb violent crimes, Scalise said in a whip notice Wednesday. Then they list the Republicans who joined the Democrats. I won't go through the whole list, but some of them won't surprise you. Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, the usual gang, and of course, Mitch McConnell himself. In fact, speaking of good old Mitch, there's a quotation from him here. The legislation that Senator Cornyn and our colleagues assembled protects the Second Amendment. There are no new bans, mandates, or waiting periods for law-abiding citizens of any age. What the bill does contain are common-sense solutions that are overwhelmingly popular with lawful gun owners, such as adding juvenile criminal records and mental health issues into the background check system. It also provides significant new funding for our mental health in schools. Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee took to Twitter to say the bill would erode Americans' constitutional right to bear arms. Enhanced funding for school security and mental health treatment is a good thing, but it's being combined with giving the left a foothold to limit the Second Amendment, Blackburn tweeted. I voted against the gun control bill because Americans' constitutional right to keep and bear arms are not negotiable. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi put out a statement saying, "On behalf of the House, we applaud the Senate for passing its gun violence prevention package on a strong bipartisan vote." She went on to say, "Every day, gun violence steals lives and scars community, and this crisis demands urgent action. While we must do more, the bipartisan Safer Communities Act is a step forward that will help protect our children and save lives." Well, that's the article, and of course, must do more. Yes, those are the operative words. My friends, as Blackbird warned us, they are eroding the Second Amendment a bit at a time, hoping we won't notice their plan to eventually get rid of the Second Amendment altogether. Now, the rhinos who go along with them and sell us down the river, they're another story. Let me talk now about the pure leftists. Here's my response to leftist Democrat politicians who push gun control. They don't really care about gun control. It's just that simple. They don't care about gun control. They say they do, but they don't. If they really cared about gun control, why are they leaving the borders wide open where the cartel can get through, where the jihadist terrorists can get through? Those people all have guns. Pardon me for making the obvious so obvious. If they really care about gun control, why aren't they seeing to it that you can at least get better police protection? Putting the Second Amendment aside, forgetting for a moment that it is unconstitutional not to allow people to protect themselves, one would think that those who were against people owning guns would at least increase funding for police protection toward those who are not allowed to arm themselves. But that's not how this thing works. Well, it works for them because they can afford hired private security, so they're not against those guns either. But as far as the police, they defund these police and allow more people arrested for violence out of jail without bail. They also know fully well that the criminals who want guns don't care about breaking the law. That's why we call them criminals. The criminals aren't staying up at nights worrying about what kinds of laws or executive orders are going to limit gun purchases. It's simply a non-issue to them. So how exactly are we getting rid of arms? That is, how exactly are we getting rid of arms from people who are dangerous? Well, we aren't. Guns are being removed from innocent, law-abiding citizens. They will remain in the hands of the guilty, the cutthroats, the evil. But Joe will put the best spin he can on it with the help of his crystal clear cues. While we're on the subject of cues, Justice Kavanaugh has been given special cues of his own, instructing him to stop eating out. I'm reading now from the New York Post. The Morton Steakout chain ripped a group of protesters who targeted Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh while he dined in its Washington, D.C. restaurant earlier this week, calling the demonstration an act of selfishness and void of decency. Well, kudos to Morton's for having the guts to stand up. A lot of establishments will not do that today, so kudos to them. I'll continue reading this article from the New York Post. The protesters, who appeared to be associated with the Shutdown DC activist group, showed up outside the restaurant Wednesday night after receiving a tip that Kavanaugh was there. While the badasses at Our Rights DC and his own neighbors are gathered outside Kavanaugh's home, the justice seems to have snuck out for a swanky DC dinner, the group posted on Twitter. We got a tip from someone who spotted him around 7:40. DM us if you want to join him. We're sure he can pull up a seat. Meanwhile, student loan forgiveness activist Melissa Burney tweeted out the restaurant's phone number. I will not repeat the phone number over the air, but she did repeat it with all the digits. Folks should call Morton's at blah, 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 and tell them it's gross they welcome Brett Kavanaugh as a diner tonight. Men who take away women's rights should be shunned. A few moments later, Shutdown DC tweeted, "We hear Kavanaugh snuck out the back with his security detail. Morton's should be ashamed for welcoming a man who so clearly hates women." While there was no interaction between the justice and the protesters, Morton's issued a statement condemning the incident. Honorable Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh and all of our other patrons at the restaurant were unduly harassed by unruly protesters while eating dinner at our Morton's establishment, a representative told Politico. Politics, regardless of your side or views, should not trample the freedom at play of the right to congregate and eat dinner. There is a time and place for everything. Disturbing the dinner of all of our customers was an act of selfishness and void of decency. Shutdown DC responded to the criticism by saying on Twitter, "No rights for us, no peace for you. Get F-K'd, you know the word." Wednesday's demonstration is the latest in a string of protests targeting conservative justices who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade on June 24th. A majority of the protests have been held outside the justices' homes. Kavanaugh himself was the target of an assassination attempt last month when a California man was arrested near his home in suburban Maryland with a suitcase and a backpack that contained a tactical police vest, a tactical knife, pepper spray, zip ties, a Glock 17 pistol, and two magazines and ammunition. The suspect has since been charged with attempted murder of a Supreme Court justice. Now, since this was written by Fox News, they're going out of their way to share an exchange between one of their White House correspondents, and this stuff is just priceless. When asked Friday whether President Biden believed it was appropriate for protesters to intimidate justices while going about their day, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said, "We condemn any intimidation of judges," but repeatedly declined to disavow the restaurant protest. Would you say, don't go to a restaurant restaurant the Supreme Court justice is at? Asked Fox News correspondent Peter Ducey. What I'm saying is we condemn any intimidation when it comes to justices, the press secretary repeated. We have been, the president has talked about this, and we have put out statements. So where's the line? Ducey asked later in the exchange. If these protesters can go to a justice's house and they think they can go to a restaurant, where is it that you don't think it's appropriate for a group of protesters to go? I just laid out, you asked me about intimidation. We condemn intimidation. We condemn any violence, Jean-Pierre repeated. And we've been very clear. That is, it is a clear definition of what violence is or what intimidation is. Peaceful protests, people should be allowed to be able to do that. In a restaurant? Ducey asked. Nodding, Jean-Pierre replied, if it's outside of a restaurant, if it's peaceful, for sure. By the way, in the past, protesters have gone inside restaurants and right into the faces of people at their tables. I'll just throw that in. But back to this fun little exchange. Really? Ducey asked. Peaceful protests, Jean-Pierre doubled down, whereas your question to me was intimidation. So these justices, because protesters do not agree with an opinion they signed on to, have no right to privacy, is what you're saying? Ducey followed up. People have the right, the White House spokesperson responded. This is what a democracy is. No, my friends, that is not what a democracy is. In a democracy, you are entitled to your opinion. It is protected by the First Amendment. That applies to official opinions of judges. That applies to informal opinions of any citizen. Intimidation designed to inhibit free speech is anti-First Amendment at its very core. But the left will never agree unless some conservatives interrupt a restaurant visited by a liberal justice. Ooh, that would be another matter altogether. But I saved the best for last. A headline from the New Republic. No constitutional right to eat dinner. All right, granted, this guy was writing kind of tongue-in-cheek. He seemed to be saying, well, if the Constitution isn't clear on abortion, neither is it clear on dinner. But he very much sympathizes with the harassing of the Chief Justice. And people are taking that headline seriously, I should say. So let me respond to it. This whole idea that somehow the Constitution protects a woman's right to have an abortion because it's her body and her choice, but doesn't protect a citizen from eating in a restaurant because it's his body and his choice of where to eat and what to eat. My friends, where does it stop? I thought we long ago decided as a country you can't refuse service at a store or restaurant. If service is refused because of a person's skin color, that's not allowed. But service can be refused because the person believes differently than you? Should the same be allowed for grocery stores? How will people eat? The very reason this country was created, the very founding document, our Declaration of Independence, calls for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And our Constitution sought to make that happen by providing a Bill of Rights. If rights don't include the permission to eat, they don't include anything. And when permission is denied because of somebody's opinion, that is a clear violation of the First Amendment. As clear a violation of that amendment as can possibly exist. So rights to your own body don't include eating. They don't include refusing vaccines. But if you want to destroy another body that lives inside of you, oh, that's a sacred right that truly exists. See how it works? Well, I guess you also have a right to transform your body. The whole transgender movement is now protected. And these rights, you should know, now extend to cartoon characters. I'm reading from USSA News. The widely popular and iconic comic strip Popeye is going to start promoting woke progressive values in its characters. Last week, cartoonist Randall K. Milholland pledged to add, quote-unquote, more characters who aren't heterosexual and promote ethnic diversity in the comic. I want to bring in more characters who aren't heterosexual. I don't live in that purely straight white world, and I don't think a lot of other people do either, Milholland told the San Antonio Express News. Milholland explained how he plans to update the comic strip to be more relatable to the non-traditional 21st century. My main goal is to make Popeye a comic people can enjoy, something they feel a connection to, he said. I also want to get back to the family dynamics of these characters. Many don't have a traditional family. They have found a family instead. Also pushing back on gender norms, Milholland said the main character, Popeye, should not be thought of only as a male. If you go by today's definition, Popeye was gender fluid, the cartoonist said. The Popeye comic strip has a nearly 100-year-long history, first appearing in a 1929 comic strip publication. At the end of June, the official Popeye Twitter account announced a Pride Month shirt that bears a graphic of Popeye standing in front of a gay flag-colored anchor and the word strong on the merchandise. Social media users slammed the woke makeover. Now these woke evil people are going after Popeye. They're saying he's always been gender fluid. The left ruined everything. It makes me want to scream, one individual commented on Twitter. Killing the Popeye brand is a poor business decision. Get woke, go broke, another user added. All right, this was from USSA News. Let me add just a little bit of extra information. Mulholland took over as the author of the Popeye comic strip in 2022. He apparently has zero respect for the previous cartoonists and authors that kept this franchise going for many years, and of course, its original creator, L.Z. Segar, who created the comic strip in 1929. But I do want to repeat the words of Mulholland one more time and let them really sink in. I want to bring in more characters who aren't heterosexual. I don't live in that purely straight white world, and I don't think a lot of other people do either. Well, bully for you. What a progressive guy. You should be so proud. Okay, look, I'm not a big Popeye fan anyway. Sure, I watched it as a kid, but even as a kid, I grew tired of it. Still, it's an iconic cartoon. Even if I believed that new cartoons should be created with gay and transgender characters, which I don't, say what you want about me, call me any name you want, I don't. Still, do we have to go back and mess with the classics? Even if we wanted to create gay cartoons, do we have to mess with the classics? Where's the diversity? If every character, even in the past, needs to change, where's the diversity? Where's the tolerance? This is a method of indoctrination. You are not allowed to have another opinion. I've been called hateful because I'm of the opinion that homosexuality is wrong. Doesn't mean I hate homosexuals. I love them. But you can love the sinner and hate the sin, and that's not enough these days. And they're going back and messing with everything. Pure indoctrination. It's gotten into Disney. It's gotten into Star Trek. It's gotten into Star Wars. They're redoing Sherlock Holmes, claiming Holmes and Watson are gay. It's gotten into Superman. Where will it stop? It won't. They don't plan to make it stop. Indoctrination does not work that way. Now, granted, just to be fair, Popeye's girlfriend Olive Oil and the way she was drawn, that was really nothing to look at. I can see how some guy might look at Olive Oil and maybe consider switching. All right, well, when we're done talking about Olive Oil, I guess that wraps up the news for the day. Be sure to join us again next week for another episode of World News Brief. We have very talented commentators in our rotating lineup, including Winston R. Holland, JP, Jim Barrier, Mike Friedenberg. You do not want to miss any of these guys. See you next time.